You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where when our teams win rivalry games, we don't use it as an excuse to make a Bill Burr joke real. Fucking Islamic Ohio State douchebag who just fucking drives into a crowd and runs people over. What the fuck? Yeah, that's right, River. Meow. As always, if you enjoy your trip here into the midside, please tell a friend. Referrals are our number one source of tourism. Also, if you would like to tell us what you learned this week, feel free to tweet at us, post on Facebook, send me a snap, preferably not of your dick. I would appreciate that. Thank you. Also, coming up is our year-end award show. So I will be posting soon about how you can help us decide what the year-end awards are. What did you think the most farcical stories of the year were? Who do you think deserves our awards, such as the Zack Snyder Award and Tom Brady Award, which they're probably going to go to Zack Snyder and Tom Brady again, let's be serious. Because it's not going to Cam Newton, we know that much. So be on the lookout for that as well. And before we get started here, I just want to ask everyone a question. Am I the only one who's noticed that people are just making up terms for things that already exist? I say that this week because I, for the first time in my life, heard of Friendsgiving, and I asked people what it was, and they were like, we just get together with our friends and eat turkey and stuffing and all of that good food. So it's exactly the same thing as you do on Thanksgiving. It sounds to me like Friendsgiving is just Thanksgiving and you're too much of a pussy to tell your family you don't actually want to spend time with them. That's what it sounds like to me. This annoys me so much. This is like worse than people who have to celebrate their birthday for the entire fucking month. And if you know me, you know how much I hate birthdays. To me, celebrating birthdays are retarded. It's like, congratulations, this is the day that's a result of your parents fucking and then your mom spitting you out her vagina. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. Like, we celebrate birthdays for that reason? Like, other people did something, you exist, therefore birthday. Now we have Friendsgiving because we want to argue about politics and get our friends mad at us too while we eat lots of food. Like, I don't understand. And then the other thing I noticed that people made up, which is similar, it's another seasonal thing here, is there's this term called cuffing season. Now, cuffing season, it isn't what you would think it is. Like, it isn't like more people start getting arrested all of a sudden. Cuffing season is apparently, it has to do with relationships, but it's not in the bedroom. Cuffing season is apparently when more people start getting in relationships because it's winter. So apparently, according to this term, hibernation equals fornication. And I just don't understand, like, why do we need to call it cuffing season? Like, why can't we just say people want to fuck more? Like, it's just a common thing, right? This is a common thing people do. So why are we making up new terms? We're making up new terms, I think, because people want to feel important and feel special, like they have ownership over their world and they're creating things. Well, just fucking stop it. Not everyone has to own culture. Not everyone has to create everything in every world. Why don't you create in the little area you're a fucking expert in, right? We don't need goddamn neurosurgeons making up terms in the middle of brain surgery. Just fucking do what you do and don't worry about this creating culture bullshit. This is probably something to do with social media. Maybe Daniel can tell us in a second. All I know is this. We are not all Gretchen Wieners. First of all, we're not played by Lacey Chabert and we're nowhere near as hot as her. And if she could not make fetch happen, none of you are going to make all of this bullshit happen. The only thing you're normalizing is your own fucking douchebaggery. Joining me this trip via GChat from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. Daniel, does this have to do with social media?
Someone woke up on the wrong side of celibacy this week. Jesus.
No, hey, God. Fuck as much as you want. I want everybody to fuck. But if you would just come up to me and be like, hey, guess what, Justin? It's fucking season. I'd be like, good on you. I'm a little bit jealous, but you know what? Enjoy fucking season.
You don't want to mix up fucking season and, like, deer season.
Is fucking season when we could shoot people who are fucking?
Yeah, I'm saying you don't want to confuse those things.
How awesome of a game would Fuck Hunt be? Now, is that a game?
Yeah, I think that's called Tinder.
One step ahead of me. I was going to say, is it a game where you shoot people who fuck or you search for fucks?
I think you search for fucks and none are given.
I can't win this level. But there are no more fucks to give.
The you know who I blame in all this with the word making up is Urban Dictionary. I think Urban Dictionary, to use a word, normalized the idea that we can all make up idiotic phrases, and it all begins with adulting. Begins and ends with adulting, doesn't it?
That's true. That's a good one. I'm going to work that one in there next time I do that rant. Adulting good.
Is literally just another name for being alive.
No, I love it.
Excellent. Thank you.
I went to the grocery store tonight and bought food for the week. Adulting. Congratulations. You managed not to die. Like, can you imagine adulting?
Congratulations. Existence. Fantastic.
Adulting on the Oregon Trail. I didn't die of dysentery. Adulting.
Woo.
I fjorded the river. Adulting.
Fjorded? I fjorded the river?
Yeah, I said that wrong on purpose.
Really? Yes. Okay. Good.
All right. Also joining us this trip via G-Chat from the House of Mouse, Elliot Rivera. Elliot, how do you feel / think about all of this?
I've actually known about Friendsgiving for a few years now. I've heard about it because, at Disney, you have the college programmers. They're away from their families, when they're working at Disney. So the first time I ever heard it was actually coined, by the college program at Disney, because since they couldn't be home, they would just meet in one another's apartments and they would have a Thanksgiving dinner there.
On Thanksgiving, on the day of Thanksgiving.
Not typically on Thanksgiving, because a lot of times they'd be working. But the idea is that it's a meal shared with friends in honor of Thanksgiving when they couldn't be home with their families to celebrate it.
Okay, but it's their one and only Thanksgiving dinner in replacement of the Thanksgiving dinner they're not having.
It could be. I mean, I know that there are a couple of people who might go to a few of them.
Wishy-washy bullshit. Now I'm even more angry.
Justin, do you know that you inadvertently participated in Friendsgiving?
It was Thanksgiving. It was people getting together with the people at the time they cared about on the day of Thanksgiving, eating turkey dinner. I didn't have
last year.
What?
Last year, when we all got together for Thanksgiving at our friend's house, everyone except apparently you was calling it Friendsgiving.
Are you fucking kidding me? It was Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving. You choose who you want to spend it with.
Oh, what? So you're already a participant in this horrible culture.
Yeah.
Ha ha.
But I think a lot.
The problem. This is the problem. You want to know why I'm not participating in fucking season? Because I can't get away from this shit.
I think that I think it's meant to serve as a distinction between a traditional Thanksgiving dinner with family, which a lot of people probably don't consider real Thanksgiving if they're not with their family. So they call it Friendsgiving to show that they're spending, the holiday with their friends and not a traditional Thanksgiving with their family, which is what
if you're an orphan and all of your family's dead, you can actually never participate in the act of Thanksgiving.
I mean, I don't know what you'd be thankful for, but but I mean,
it depends on the family, I suppose.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
but I'm just relaying what I have learned among these college age nitwits that I worked with at Disney for so long.
So everything you learned is the complete opposite of what's correct.
I'm just asking if being with your family is essential to the definition of Thanksgiving, because if so, I don't think I'm ever going to have Thanksgiving again. And also, who is your family? Like, is it just my wife? Does that count as my family?
Yeah.
Yes, now.
If I had apart
yes, you literally have a family, Daniel.
Now,
so basically, this whole thing is made to exclude Justin, is what this is. This is what this sounds like to me.
And how many is a quorum for Thanksgiving then? If like my wife can't make it, but I have a second cousin who does, is that Thanksgiving? My point is, it's stupid to make that the definitional thing of Thanksgiving. So,
yeah, just because anyway. You people are all fucking pussies and can't tell your families to fuck off, like,
like Justin.
Hey, they still give me shit.
That's right.
All
right,
you want to talk about people who still give people shit even when they talk shit about them?
What?
That was my transition into talking about leftists for the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just
Cuba Libre. Fidel Castro is dead. Ding dong, the communist dictator is dead. No, not Mucho or Nacho Libre, but Cuba Libre. The communist dictator died, ironically, on Black Friday, which was pointed out in many places on the internet. But not everyone apparently was sad. Not everyone was happy, I should say, about the passing of this evil mass murdering fuckhead. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau hailed Fidel Castro as a remarkable leader in his eulogy of the Cuban dictator. He says, quote, "It is with deep sorrow that I learned today of the death of Cuba's longest serving president. Fidel Castro was a larger than life leader." I know, he says president. Fuck you, he's not the president, he's a dictator. "Larger than life leader who served his people, I guess in the sense of that Twilight Zone episode where you literally eat them.
He served his people.
Uh-huh. For almost half
Soylent
a century.
Soylent Green is Cuban!
A legendary revolutionary and orator, Mr. Castro made significant improvements to the education and healthcare of his island nation. Significant improvements which caused literally tens of thousands of them to flee on rafts across shark-infested water. While a controversial figure," this is continuing with Mr. Trudeau's eulogy, "figure, both Mr. Castro's supporters and detractors recognize his tremendous dedication and love for the Cuban people, but a deep and lasting affection for El Comandante."
But here's the thing. This started out okay for like the first sentence.
"It is with."
No.
"It is with," fine. And then you get with "it is with deep," and you're like, where are we going with this?
Okay, well,
and then
you get the sorrow. Right.
That it goes right off the edge.
That's bad. But I'm talking about when he's described as a remarkable leader. Technically, he's remarkable. He's remarkably evil and bad. It's nowhere that you have to be remarkably good. The Browns are a remarkably bad football team.
They're so bad, I must remark.
Yes.
To make remarks, therefore, they are remarkable.
Definitionally
remarkable.
And then the funny thing is, it starts, the CNN article starts with that, and I was reading it, and I was like, oh yeah, he's remarkable, okay, like, you can get away with that. And then I kept reading, I was like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Seriously, Canadian fans, you gotta do something about this guy.
Mark. Please, Mark. How could you allow this douche to run your country?
We track well with the gay Canadian audience. They can't be happy about this. This guy, what if fucking Fidel hated gays? Didn't he? Didn't he just fucking kill
them? Put them in re-education camps.
Yeah, we're mad
like
about
he literally
Mike Pence.
Rounded them up. Yes, we're mad about Mike Pence. Exactly. All the lefties out there who were worried that Donald Trump was going to be a dictator and then mourned the loss of Fidel Castro just look like complete fucking D-bags.
Can I ask a serious question now about that?
Can't stand the hypocrisy. Uh-huh.
Doesn't it show their true colors? That if they don't have a problem with dictatorship,
true
they have a problem
colors
with
colors shining through.
Yes, I take it you saw Trolls.
I didn't, but that song's been in my head since you mentioned
it. Cyndi Lauper, man.
Okay, well, Trolls. Cyndi Lauper and other leftists like her, aren't they showing that perhaps they don't have a problem with dictatorship? They have a problem with dictatorship that they think either takes away their power or takes away their agenda.
They want their own dictator.
Yes, of course. Of course that's the case. This is what I was harping on last week when you wouldn't hear all this dictator talk in America if the dictator was promising to, close any business who emitted too much carbon. That would be a leftist wet dream. They're all about the dictator. They're all about the abuse of power, as long as you're abusing it for what they see as proper means. And in this case, Castro was abusing his power to bring free healthcare and free education to the people, therefore, good guy.
Yeah, Trudeau said that too, murdered, right?
Murdered these people. Sorry, forget that. That's fine.
Was it Adam Carolla today? Where he said, like, the average salary for the day for, or the average income for a day is like $2 for a Cuban family or something.
Oh, yeah. Real revolutionary there.
$2. Jill Stein. People. Ridiculous.
Jill Stein, the Green Party presidential candidate, tweeted out, Fidel Castro was a symbol of the struggle for justice in the shadow of empire. Presente.
Oh, my God.
What is this empire these people are afraid of?
The empire of capitalism, Justin. So I just want to finish off his remarks because on behalf of all Canadians, Sophie, I guess is his wife, can't tell, and I offer our deepest condolences to the family, friends, and many, many supporters of Mr. Castro, too many's in there, which is too many. And we join the people of Cuba today in mourning the loss of this remarkable leader. Do you know what the people were doing in Miami?
They're dancing in the street. Are you kidding?
Yeah, they are fucking partying like it's 1956. Thank you.
That's a reference.
Whatever. The point is, it was just his eulogy so misses the mark that it spawned a Twitter hashtag called Trudeologies.
Are these other eulogies he could give?
These are other people that he would have, like, what he would have said about them if they had died. Like, I'll pick out some of my favorites. While controversial, great heights in space construction and played a formative role in his son's life. Let's see. While a controversial figure, Mr. Gacy entertained many children at birthday parties. I offer my condolences to the family of Genghis Khan, a controversial figure, but also created a bond between the East and the West. One that's not on here on my screen that I liked the moment was, while controversial, Vlad the Impaler did touch the hearts of millions.
Did someone do Hitler and talk about him being a struggling artist that was misunderstood?
Today we mourn painter and animal rights activist Adolf Hitler. His death also highlights the need for suicide awareness.
Yeah, there we go. That's pretty much what I just said, isn't it?
Though a controversial figure, Freddy Krueger taught children to believe in their dreams.
Mr. Stalin's greatest achievement was his eradication of obesity in the Ukraine.
Oh my God.
Through innovative agricultural reforms. Let us remember Sauron, whose leadership united disparate peoples across the lands of Middle Earth in singular purpose.
All without being seen.
That's right. So he so fucking missed the mark with this eulogy that it's insane.
Well, and I think he's even as bad, wasn't it?
It was bad. It wasn't Trudeau bad. That's why Trudeau got the crazy Twitter talk. But yeah, I mean, his was sort of mealy mouthed and apologetic. If I can pull it up, I will.
Can you do the only proper response?
What is? Actually, and before we rip into Donald Trump, let's praise him for a moment, because that's how we work here at the Midside. Is Trump's, which was basically something like Fidel Castro is dead, exclamation point, which was just hilarious to see from a guy who's going to be the president of the United States.
Yeah, who fuck uses but, exclamation points, dude? Like,
but his eulogy was basically, this guy was a brutal dictator who's going to be remembered for oppressing his people. It's too bad that he didn't die sooner. It's like, yes, that is the correct eulogy. So,
can you say the word of what position he held again?
Prime Minister?
No.
Trudeau?
No, not Trudeau. The
Castro?
Other Castro, yeah.
Dictator.
The way you're saying it sounds like George Bush describing Mr. Potato Head's genitalia.
He's got a dictator.
That's how you're saying it.
Okay. You're punch drunk. You're punch drunk. Statement by the president on the passing of Fidel Castro. At this time of Fidel Castro's passing, we extend a hand of friendship to the Cuban people. We know this moment fills Cubans in Cuba and the United States with powerful emotions, recalling the countless ways in which Fidel Castro altered the course of individual lives, families, and the Cuban nation. History will record and judge the enormous impact of this singular figure on the people and the world around him. So you can tell that it's very mealy-mouthed and sort of trying to balance. Yes, he altered the course of individuals' lives by fucking interning them in camps and then murdering their families for speaking out against his administration.
Small detail. Very small.
Small detail.
Yeah. My favorite was...
It does end with... Today we offer condolences to Fidel Castro's family, and our thoughts and prayers are with the Cuban people.
Condolences to
the Cuban people who lost a dictator? What the fuck?
My favorite was Rand Paul's response. He literally just goes, good riddance. That was perfect. Thank you, Senator Paul.
Excellent.
And by the way,
I did
leftists, if you want to know why the fuck Donald Trump won the election, this is why.
It's pretty close to why.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty close to.
I mean, to no. Why. But anyway, let me put it this way: if the only thing you had to judge on, right, was Obama's speech and Donald Trump's tweet with the exclamation point, and you were forced to choose, or someone shot you, wouldn't the obvious choice be Donald Trump?
You were forced to choose, otherwise Fidel Castro shot you. I'd probably choose the exclamation point, and that's coming from a guy who hates exclamation points.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So that's Donald Trump. Like, Donald Trump is like, stop it with the fucking exclamation points, you idiot! But then the other side speaks up, and you're like, exclamation point.
Sounds like a whole recount nonsense. But speaking of things that are insane, the makers of Cards Against Humanity convince people to donate $100,000 for their holiday hole. That is not
prostitution.
The makers of I love CNN. The makers of the irreverent and lewd game Cards Against Humanity celebrated Black Friday with another unconventional stunt this year by digging a massive hole in the ground for no reason whatsoever. The project, dubbed the Holiday Hole, saw online donors contribute more than $100,573, or as organizers called it, money thrown in the hole for the frivolous dig. Quote, as long as money keeps coming in, we'll keep digging, Cards Against Humanity says on holidayhole.com. It's dedicated page for the project. A stunt is, of course, more complex than last year's stunt when the company asked people to send them $5 for absolutely nothing. 11,248 people ponied up. I don't understand why leftists aren't celebrating this as a great jobs creator.
Well, yeah.
Isn't this a leftist economic wet dream?
Yeah, that was
along the same... We'll just pay some people to dig a hole? Yeah.
That was along the same lines of what I was going to ask. Is this more or less efficient than government regulation?
I mean, at least this money wasn't burned in the government coffers. At least they dug up a good $100,000 hole. Like, it wasn't a weak asshole that took 12 months and 45 environmental impact studies and
you know what we should
72
do?
Bureaucrats. So
we should get the guy who dug the hole or the owner of the company that dug the hole and interview them on this program to find out what they did with the money.
Assume they bought workers and blow, but I have no idea. But there were people who were offended by this, of course, because what's more offensive than a hole in the ground?
All the holes in your fucking hands, yes. That's what.
At This Is Chad on Twitter,
fuck you, Chad.
Tweeted, I'm sitting here with 14,000 people watching the end of the holiday hole, the moment that sums up 2016. Because it was live streamed. The digging was live streamed, by the way. At Three-Headed Dingo? Yes, at Three-Headed Dingo on Twitter writes, holiday hole is complete. They raised a total of $100,000. Humanity and waste saddens me. People, of course, bitching about that it wasn't donated to philanthropic causes, charities, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what do you think? Is it okay to pay a company to build a hole to do nothing? Or is there some intrinsic value to this and people should have spent this money in a different way?
You loaded the question with the word intrinsic.
Okay. Just answer the fucking question.
Yeah, spend your money on whatever the fuck you want to spend it on.
That's not okay. That's a terribly short answer. Just want to elaborate in any way whatsoever, considering it is an audio medium.
No, no. I mean, in today's day and age where everyone kickstarts everything, who gives a shit? If you want to give money to a hole, like, how much was the average donation? Do we know? I mean, was it like, what was it, 423 or whatever Bernie Sanders' number was? That'd be interesting to find out. Was the average donation to the hole more than the average donation to the Bernie Sanders campaign?
Yeah, talk about throwing your money into a hole.
Jeez. Well, no, I mean, it's an interesting question, right? Because I think it probably it's got to be a highly contextual answer for each person, because you could argue you're losing your money, which could be better applied to something else in your life. But
yeah,
if you have enough money that you can give $5 and it doesn't matter, and you think, you know, and you think the long term, like, why does no one understand the ultimate charity is giving to another person? Like, ultimately, as I was saying, that money's going to go to pay the salary for the guy digging the hole who otherwise might not have. And this company gets the contract to dig the hole. So that $100,000 went somewhere and did something for someone. You know, maybe it ultimately ended up, you know, helping out Cherry down at the strip club or whatever we want to call her. Hillary, that's what she's up to these days.
Yeah, you're sounding a little Keynesian. The money could have been used to produce something, which would have been of value. The hole was not of any value to anyone. It was not even an end in itself.
You told me to talk more, so I'm just fucking rambling. Like, I would not spend it on this because I could at least, even if it was a dollar, could buy a candy. A piece of candy, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Ooh, piece of candy. Ooh, piece of candy.
Thank you, James Woods.
But, you know, I don't know if I could argue against somebody saying I had an extra dollar and this amused me.
I love the FAQ on holidayhole.com. What's happening here? Cards Against Humanity is digging a holiday hole. Is this real? Where is the hole? America, and in our hearts. Is there a deeper meaning or purpose to the hole? No. What do I get for contributing money to the hole? A deeper hole. What else are you going to buy? An iPod? That's what it says. So, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. One interesting way that people, so like the top donor donated $1,750, and it was just a guy named Robert out of Sunnyvale. Yeah, nothing else good came out of Sunnyvale. So, but third and fourth donors, and the top five donors were listed on the screen at all times, were all companies. BlueDriver.com in Mount Pearl donated $1,002 so they could be on the list. TacticalGear.com out of St. Louis donated $1,000. So it was an interesting advertising thing for them.
No one who said we can dig a bigger hole or better hole than they can?
No, apparently not.
No, like, would a demolition company?
Yeah, I think the average donation was about $5. So it was around the Bernie Sanders number.
And why didn't that Cyanide and Happiness game donate to there? Wouldn't that be the target audience for this?
What are you talking about?
Am I the only one who had that ad pop up where you can buy a game based on the comic strip Cyanide and Happiness, and it's similar to Cards Against Humanity?
What are you clicking on the internet?
I fucking hate Facebook Stop. Advertisements. Are you a fan?
Stop clicking on things.
Of macaroni and cheese, but you're also a fan of the Fifth Elements. Here's a statue of Lee Lou Dallas made out of macaroni and cheese. That's Facebook advertising.
So Facebook determined that you want happiness, but are never going to get it. So you're probably going to drink cyanide.
You've never heard of the comic strip
with cyanide and happiness.
There's a comic strip called Cyanide and Happiness.
I've seen it, but I didn't know it was called that.
Oh, okay. Well, excuse me for giving things their proper respect.
Well, it sounds fake to me, and apparently this is a huge epidemic on the internet.
I was giving you the fucking transition. I mentioned Facebook and everything.
I got there. There's an outrage over fake news. The problem is that the outrage over fake news is based on fake news about fake news.
Du-du-du.
Which is awesome.
It's fake news all the way down.
That's right. This is from Reason.com, but it's a reprint from the Richmond Times-Dispatch. So many Democrats, let us be pretty blunt about it, are blaming the loss of the election to Donald Trump on fake news and its propagation on Facebook. And so, like, one BuzzFeed study concluded that fake news beat out real news during the past 3 months of the election. But the problem is that that study is in itself fake, or at least it's incredibly misleading. Basically, what they did is they looked at Facebook engagement metrics on Facebook and determined that the most engaged story on Facebook was a fake story about Pope Francis endorsing Donald Trump, and it got 960,000 engagements. An engagement for the uninitiated in the social media world. A comment, a share, anytime you interact with the story, that's an engagement.
Oh, I thought it was when you read the story and it made you want to get Facebook married to somebody. Like, suddenly your status changed.
No, no. Cyanide and happiness, Jeff. So the
yeah,
the
that's what engagement
real...
is. First the happiness, the engagement, and then the cyanide of the marriage.
There you go, Al Bundy. So the real top story comparing Trump's level of corruption to Clinton's 149,000 engagements. That was their real story example, by the way, comparing Trump's level of corruption to Clinton's level of corruption. That was the real story. Okay. Anyway, reason why this entire study is nonsense, and I would have told you this even outside of the article, Facebook engagements are not everything, and they're certainly not, engagements are not telling of what the actual quality of the engagement is or what the engagement means in reality. If I have 849,000 engagements that say this is an incredibly important story that you need to read, over 960,000 engagements of look at this fucking fake piece of crap shit. But we can't tell that from these numbers. The Pope Francis endorsing Donald Trump story may have gotten half their engagements of people on the left sharing it going, this is complete bullshit. Why would you believe this? So it means nothing. But in addition to that, story points out, another good thing here, that the quote-unquote top news story comes from a website called endthefed.org. I know libertarians out there will love that notion, but the site is producing a bunch of fake bullshit content. But endthefed.org is, according to the story, the 2,488,992nd most popular website in the United States. Or in the world, I'm sorry. And compare that to the Washington Post, which is the source of the second most engaged story, which ranks 195th in the world and 40th in the United States. The Washington Post racks up by itself 770 million page views a month. That's insane. And certainly a gazillion more page views than whatever it is the fake news story generated. Because again, 960,000 engagements doesn't mean 960,000 people read the story. It means they clicked like, commented. They could have said in the comments, this is a shit story. We don't know. So this whole thing about fake news beating out real news is in of itself fake news.
Yeah, they just had something
we've been using on the podcast for a while now. Hashtag, this is why Trump won. Because we keep talking about fucking fake news when instead of confronting the actual issues.
Yeah.
The media, the left, wants any excuse except their own ineptness and the terribleness of their own ideas to be true as to why they lost.
The other one is, of course, the Electoral College excuse, where now all of a sudden we need to change or get rid of the Electoral College because that's stopping the person who everyone wants to win. And then I saw the argument today that, like, a vote in Wyoming counts three times as much as a vote in California. That's what people are trying to argue.
I mean, if you look at it the other way, it's like you have complete regionalism. You have complete, as Justin pointed out on Facebook, you have complete Hunger Games if you get rid of the Electoral College. Why would a president ever go to Wyoming or go to North Dakota or Alabama or whatever? They would only have to visit California, New York, and Illinois.
And the people
sometimes
in California
Florida.
Will vote for the people in North Dakota and South Dakota to fight each other for their own amusement. If you think that will not happen, you're fucking retarded.
It's true, because those three states, along with sometimes Florida, could elect the president every single time.
Yeah.
Every single time. And no other people in any other state would really have a fucking say in the matter. I mean, if you take out California, Trump dominates the popular vote. That's how many votes are in California.
So that's why I say let him secede. Bye.
Please do. Absolutely.
I'll leave. Fuck. Here's the other more thing. Incentive. I'll leave you alone. I'll get out of here if you get out of the union. Bye.
That's right. Bye, Kalisha. There we go. Sounds racist. Here's the other thing. What I hear about this fake news stuff. People think that all fake news favors conservatives, which is ludicrous on its face. And then two, media has done a bang up job producing fake news itself. And this article points out numerous examples, not the least of which is the most recent Rolling Stone article, by the way, that is, said that a bunch of people in UVA raped a woman on campus, which was CNN retracted its story alleging that the U.S. military used nerve gas in a mission to kill American defectors in Laos. News had to denounce its own series alleging the CIA was to blame for crack cocaine epidemic. The Washington Post gave up a Pulitzer after learning that Janet Cook's report about an 8-year-old heroin addict was false. In 1998, the Cincinnati Inquirer renounced its own series alleging dark doings by the Chiquita Banana Company. NBC News had to confess that it rigged GM trucks with incendiary devices for an explosive Dateline segment. The fucking mainstream media has done a stellar job producing completely nonsensical, made-up, agenda-driven news on its own.
Dan Rather?
What else does it? It's a threat to democracy. When the New York Times does it, it's just good, solid journalism. You realize that the New York Times was known for a long time as there was a form of journalism.
Yellow journalism. Taught,
well, not just yellow journalism, which is sort of eccentric and can be over the top, but there's actually a method called New York Times journalism. This is taught in history of journalism courses, where basically
asshole
you run
journalism.
Whatever you want. You run whatever you want on the front page. Andrew Jackson eats puppies for breakfast.
Yeah, and then you retract it.
And then the next day you retract it, but in like section C, page 28, lower bottom corner in a little tiny box in gray font.
Yeah, we see this strategy, though, in the way leftists socialize with each other. And the right has started to take this on, too. I mean, largely, Donald Trump ran his campaign based upon this idea, where you come out and you set the tone and you set the conversation as the other person's an asshole. And then a lot of people, especially with the way the education system does not and the culture does not encourage critical thinking, a lot of people will just accept that as fact and not think any more of it. I mean, this is how they got away with saying Donald Trump sexually assaulted women. And then people were like, oh, yeah, he sexually assaulted women. And people still believe that to this day, that somehow he didn't even have a court case against him because of it. And people believe that because if you say something, when people hear it, they just accept it as truth. And that's it.
Yes, especially if someone reports it. And if you put it in a headline, then it must be true. This happened to us, by the way, recently. I don't ever share a story. This used to be my mechanism for sharing a story.
Wait, us as in the mid-side?
I wouldn't. Whoa. Yes, indeed. Not on the show, but in our news feed. I'll get there in a moment. Whoa. I used to never share a story until it was reported by one of the major newspapers, WashPo, Wall Street Journal, Times, Chicago Trib, etc. Because they did vetting of stories, and they weren't worried about timeliness in the same way that HeatStreet.com was. So I waited to share the story of CNN news until it was reported by the Washington Post. And it was. So then I shared it in the thread, story of how CNN apparently aired 30 minutes of porn. Turns out that was fabricated wholesale. Like, there literally was no evidence of this ever. It was, you want to know the source of this entire story? It was reported all over the internet, including the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, etc. One tweet from a guy in the Boston area. And all his tweet said was, why is CNN running hardcore porn at 11 whatever at night? No images of it, no reports of it from anyone else. The station didn't say anything about it.
Was it
that
just
was
a show
source.
About the New Deal because it fucked America?
The guy just apparently just sent a lie into the universe, and it was picked up by BuzzFeed, and it was picked up then by all the major news outlets, and it became fact.
But this happens all
the
time.
And I guarantee 5 years from now, if you asked Remember that time that CNN ran 30 minutes of porn? Someone will go, yeah, I remember that. That was crazy. Wasn't that crazy?
I remember.
Fair? Yeah.
But see, that's the thing. Like, this is the problem. I've been railing about this for a few years now, I think. And it's social media. And it's the anonymity behind social media. I mean, why are people surprised there are fake news stories on Facebook? There are people who have networks of fake profiles. And if you report the profile to Facebook and you go, this is a fake profile, they just go, we reviewed your report of their account and there's nothing wrong with it. Facebook doesn't give a shit. They just want the numbers to say they have the user metrics. They don't care if the fake users or not.
Yeah, they're creating their own little bubble, interestingly. But I don't know. Elliot, have you ever fallen for a fake news story?
Several. I mean, every time one of these hoax stories comes up, you know, the race, social media, I've gotten to the point now where I just, and I think we touched on this broadly in our own private, you know, chats and discussions, but it gets to the point now where there's so many false, you know, stories and hoaxes that are perpetrated through social media that the culture, it seems, is becoming inured to the idea that you can't trust anybody. It's this idea that there's no objective truth anymore. And it's coming out, they deliberately create this echo chamber where they're not just trying to, it's more than just posting false stories. They're literally trying to break your trust in the media, in news media. They don't want you to be able to examine the information and draw conclusions and integrate that into a body of knowledge. They really want you to mistrust where you're, you know, yourself, your interpretation of the information. And they, one of the effective ways that they're doing that is by trying to make you not trust the news. I mean, if you hear something from HuffPo, conservatives will tell you, well, that's a liberal rag. But if you look, you quote something from National Review, liberals tell you, oh, that's conservative stuff. I mean, we're getting people just, they don't believe that they can trust anything. And that's kind of a scary place for us to be.
It is pretty scary. How many times have you mourned the death of Carlos Santana? I'm pretty sure I've seen that guy die on my newsfeed more times than it's like seems like every 16 days there's a Carlos Santana found dead today, the age of 65.
I just literally unfucking follow everyone. Like, if I actually reply to one of your statuses on Facebook, consider yourself fortunate. If you post one asinine thing.
Thank your lucky stars.
Fake thing. Like, you're gone. Like, I don't have fucking mental energy to waste. The only time I see stuff is with the trending topics, and those are fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, the trending topics are insane. The things that trend are ridiculous, and the things that don't are even more ludicrous.
Well, 90% of the time, it's something that's already in my newsfeed. It'll be like, trending topic, Julian Edelman. And I'll be like, yeah, thanks. I know. I watched the game and I follow him. Like, look at this touchdown catch from Julian Edelman. Fuck off.
Well, is this fake news normalizing for us our inability to determine reality from farce? Because apparently normalize is the new normal. Have you heard this word more and more lately, gentlemen? I didn't really consciously think that I was hearing this word more until you sent this article, Justin. And then as I was looking through my Facebook feed, all the leftist people, the word normalized comes up like a gajillion fucking times.
It's difficult for me because I went to college in the future. And what I mean by that is Ithaca College from 01 to 05 when I was there was what is going on now. So to me, when I hear this stuff, I'm just like, oh yeah, whatever. And I tune it out because it's been normalized for me. Ironically.
Yes.
So to me, like, this is stuff I've all seen before. Like, it's not new to me, but that's what they do. They repeat it, right? That's one of the rules for radicals. Repetition until something becomes accepted.
Yeah. This is a Wired.com article called Normalization of Normalize is a Sign of the New Normal. The word normalize has become, well, normal. Long before Donald Trump became the president-elect, his detractors warned against, quote, normalizing his myriad violations of campaign decorum. the bigotry and misogyny, the Putinphilia and cavalier talk about nuclear weapons, since Trump's election 2 weeks ago, don't normalize this has become a liberal mantra, a reminder to stay vigilant in the face of apparent presidential behavior that Americans may feel tempted or emotionally bludgeoned into excusing as just the way the country. And in fact, the article point interviews linguists to back up the fact that the word is not just thing that you may be seeing a few times. It is becoming used more and more and more. In fact, in 2016, the word has already been used 50% more than it was used in 2015, which was already a banner year for the word normalize. So the country is normalizing a new use, because it's not normalized like bring into balance. It's normalized in a moral sense. Don't make it a thing that is normal. Don't allow it to become a part of your life.
And that's what I mean. Like, for me, number two has always been the definition.
It is shit.
Number one is more scientific, right? So you have to go to the airlock to, you know, let the air pressure normalize before you can get back on the ship. That's what they're talking about.
Or, like, they point out here, like, you know, U.S.-Chinese relations need to normalize, or, you know, it's basically create a balance.
Right, return to homeostasis type of deal. Like, so at the end of a story, things normalize.
Well, I don't speak gay, but yes, I think I get where you're going.
Nicely done.
But yeah, I mean, but to me, it's always been the other definition, the normal, the just saying, like, oh, let's make this acceptable. We're going to make this acceptable. I think, you know what? I've used this before they were using it. Or look at all the things the left has tried to normalize. I mean, this is why it's such a good headline. They normalize the use of normalize through its repetition, right? They normalize the idea that all white men are evil through the repetition that we're sexist and racist. Do they not?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Whenever the left wants to normalize something, they just have to say it over and over again. This time, they just actually use the word normalize. And I think what's really going on here is something that I get more into later in the article, which is that normalize is as much a signpost, a virtue signal, if you will, as it is an actual word describing something in reality. The left is using the word normalize to show that they're a good person, at least not a Trump person right now. And this happens all the time in multiple cultures and whatever. I think conservative, like the alt-right, has used the word cuck, for instance, to,
yes, it's
sort
the
of
same equivalent.
Signal their sort of allegiances and whatnot. So I think it's more so that than it is actual concern with reality. But
oh yeah, no, it's completely otherizing the other person in order to virtue signal yourself. Oh well, look at how crazy and different they are.
Yeah, which is insane, right? From the left, which used to be the party of let your freak flag fly. Well, you know, don't tell me what I can and can't do.
I mean, that's part of what came unraveled in this election. Like, that's the whole thing I don't understand. Like, that's why I can only laugh at it. They were supposed to be the party of progress, and they've convinced everyone they're progressives, but everything they do is backwards looking. But, oh, we're forward thinking because we want to accept everyone. No, you don't. Oh, we want to make, you know, improvements in technology and society. No, you don't. Tell me one thing they're actually progressive on.
Gender.
That's regressive. The idea that we
I know.
37 genders. Thank you, actually, because you finally gave me the impetus to delete Tinder. Because the second I saw the news story there were 37 genders on Tinder, I was like, I'm not fucking touching this with a fucking however big my
borrowed dick.
Yeah. With the dictator. I'm not touching it with a dictator.
Yeah. Indeed. Is this I don't know say about this. It's all signposting, it's all virtue signaling. The left has no connection to reality anymore. They're just waiting for their dictator. And believe me, if Donald Trump fucks this up in the way that I think he's going to fuck this up, we may be in for a very leftist dictator coming in the future. So you better cross your fingers and pray, evangelicals, that this goes at least somewhat well for the Donald.
Dictator.
Because otherwise we are dictated.
All right. Do you want to virtue signal ourselves?
Always.
Yeah. Let's show how impressive we are when it comes to interpreting art in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. No reviews this week because I was not able to see a rival, because whenever the Patriots play a Sunday afternoon game, that kills my weekend. Like, my entire schedule is thrown off. But, Midsiders, this coming Sunday is a morning game, and then they play on Monday night. That means I basically have two whole Sundays where I can see movies. So now's the time, if you want me to see a movie, to bug me, and I will review it. I will be seeing Arrival, though, so fuck you if you try to get me to see anything other than Arrival. For now...
I have a super quick review.
Oh, it's not on the outline.
Like,
go ahead.
20-second review. Which is, I started watching The Crown on Netflix. Here's the quick review of The Crown. I'm 3 episodes in. I don't know what it's about. And I don't mean that, like, I literally know what's going on. Like, it's a historical dramatization of how Elizabeth became Queen of England. Which is fine, but if it's just going to be a fictionalized documentary, I don't get it. Like, the show is so gorgeous and so beautifully acted, just incredible production. And, like, it's moving in many ways, but it's just documentary?
Yeah, this is the difference. When you're using the word about, what you're talking about is the difference between naturalism and romanticism. Naturalistically, it's about what you just described. But romantically, you're talking about there's no unifying abstract concept that's driving all of the artistic decisions and all of the character decisions.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what the theme is. I think it's purposely, there is no theme. Yes. I think it's just sort of what happened, but done in a beautifully shot way.
Yes.
And you get to see a lot of Matt Smith's ass.
Elliot.
Hello!
Yeah.
Wait until he regenerates into Peter Capaldi, though.
Downgrade. If you like beautiful historical drama, I mean, I guess you should be in. And I'm going to continue watching because the performances are incredible. John Lithgow plays Winston Churchill. But again, okay, but I don't know what the point is. But all right, here we go.
You've now entered the place I am in with Game of Thrones and The Walking Dead.
I'll get to Game of Thrones later. Go ahead.
All right. Let's take down some trailers, shall we?
Trailer takedown.
First trailer. It's the Cars 3 teaser. This is like a 45-second spot. And it just shows the cars going around the track. And then Lightning McQueen, I think he crashes. And holy shit, the ending of this trailer is super heavy.
A little dark.
After this moment, everything changes. I was like, what? Did he just die?
I don't think he died, but certainly, is this going to be like a car rehab movie? Is this going to be the thing that the animated car version of the movie with Miles Teller? Who is a boxer in a car accident.
Yeah, I forget what it's called.
Yeah. I don't know. But I'm what are our options? Hugging this?
Hugging this one? Or tackle it?
I was not a huge fan of the first two Cars. They're still good. They're just sort of my least favorite Pixar movies. But for animation alone, I'm in. The animation in this teaser is ludicrously good. Like, I've never seen such beautiful shading, shadowing. The sparks in this animation are just ridiculous. It's animation porn. I don't like to use the word porn in Disney, sort of in the same breath, but it just looks outstanding. So I'm in.
Elliot?
You already know. I'm hugging. It's Disney and Pixar.
Woo!
Well, I didn't hate Cars. I didn't dislike it. I actually quite enjoyed Cars, and I think part of the reason it's so maligned is it's the Donald Trump of Pixar movies. It's very much fuck you, leftist elitist, middle America is awesome. And it isn't until Lightning McQueen realizes that he's able to win. So I think there's a lot of the culture against
there it. There is that element, yes. But
yeah. I haven't seen the second one yet.
I just thought it wasn't that good of a movie.
I liked it quite a lot. And it's really cool to go there and then go to Disneyland where they have the whole street set up. That's pretty cool.
Building it the last time I was there, but...
Well, come on out and visit.
Come on down.
Radiator Springs.
Yeah, exactly.
Tomater.
I haven't seen the second, so I will see that, and then I will see this, because I'm hugging this, because holy shit, I loved the end of that trailer. It was like, everything will change. I think this might be Rocky, where he becomes the trainer, and he trains the young guy.
Oh, that's a good guess, actually. I like that.
Yeah.
Good fan theory.
Everything will change. I mean, it doesn't change if he rehabs and goes and races again. If he gets permanently injured.
I was being more dark, like he has to deal, as a cripple for the rest of his life.
Well, that can be part of it. He's a cripple and has to train someone else.
Yeah. Krusty, but the nine trainer that trains the neophytes, yeah.
Yeah, that's how you keep it going, right? Because, they built the whole land. They're going to want to keep this thing going.
Oh, it's one of their most lucrative,
which is the name of Ludacris's rapper brother.
I hope you're joking.
Yeah, I'm joking.
It's sad that I can't tell, but I hope you aren't joking.
Ludacris featuring Lucrative!
I mean, the fucking rapper, fake rapper they came up with Joe Coy on the Adam Carolla show, Debris, the dairy rapper. Like, that could have been real. Like, they were joking, and I was going, okay, it sounds really real from here, but all right. Yeah. Anyway.
All right, let's do the second trailer. This movie is called Detour. It seems to be about, I have no fucking idea what it's about. Much like you with the crowd. So I'm just going to give my opinion because that's the only accurate way I can describe this trailer. So the trailer starts out with a guy talking to another guy, and they're both young, nondescript guys. The guy sort of looks like a Jonas brother that's being talked to, but I don't think it is a Jonas brother. Elliot, is it a Jonas brother?
No, it's not a Jonas brother.
Okay, so it's not a Jonas brother, but he was clearly cast because they were like, get that guy because he looks like a Jonas brother. he's the illegitimate lost Jonas brother. The one
swallowed by a whale. Yeah.
the first guy asked the Jonas brother, if you could split yourself in two, would you? And like basically half of the person is the evil person, the other half is the good half. And then for a while, the trailer's in like split screen, and then it stops being in split screen, and then there's a blonde girl who's basically like, I got you wrong, didn't I? And he's like, no, you got me just right. And then it goes back to split screen, and then it ends.
That's a horrible description of this trailer, by the way.
That's what went on in my head, okay?
Okay. The movie is apparently about a guy who wants to murder his stepfather.
Didn't get any of that.
Do you have the balls to murder your stepfather?
And that's the premise.
The question he asked, like, would you do it if one half of you did it, but the other half of you didn't remember that you did it and you could move on with your life or whatever? And he says yes. And that's where it goes split screen. So it's unclear if the movie is just a psychological thriller or if there's literally like a sci-fi element where he can split his personality or something.
Yeah, because see, my brain immediately went to the more interesting premise. I would watch this movie if it was in split screen where half of him was doing the murder stuff, and then we saw what the other good half was doing at the same time. Like, that would be really innovative and cool. There's actually an episode of Coupling that's similar to this, where it splits between the guys and the girls as they get ready for a date with each other, and you see the way they're both prepping. And that was pretty cool. If they did a similar thing here, that would be really cool. But I don't want to watch a movie about, like, a guy maybe killing his stepfather. That sounds awful.
Well, you, sir, don't want to watch this movie. And neither do I. This looks shitty.
Yeah, it's not really doing it for me either.
Tackles all around. Woo! Where do you find
so many
shit,
tackles,
Justin?
We can go fishing.
Oh, gosh.
I think what you're trying to tell me is Silence, which is the name of the next trailer.
Silence, thank you!
Silence is a movie starring Andrew Garfield and Adam Driver. They are playing Christian. Are they Catholic or just Christian?
I think just Christian.
Oh, really? They seemed pretty Catholic to me.
Yeah, anyway. I think they were Catholic too. Playing Catholic missionaries. And they go into a country and their faith is tested.
Japan.
Basically, was it Japan? Yeah. They go into Japan and their faith is tested. And the trailer ends with, I pray and don't hear any answers. Am I praying to silence or something like that? Here's my thing with this trailer. It's directed by Martin Scorsese, so it looks beautiful. I kept expecting them to start fighting people. Like, I was waiting for this to turn into an action movie. You've got Kylo Ren, and you've got one of the Spider-Men. Like, they're going to start killing people. And just when I'm getting to the point where I'm impatient, I'm like, how long is left in this fucking trailer? It goes, and Liam Neeson. And I go, how has no one died yet?
The greatest Catholic action movie ever. Yes. Same feeling. I kept thinking they were gonna pull out a staff at some point and beat some ass.
Yeah.
But never happened. The Spider-Man kid, what's his name? Andy Garcia.
Andrew Garfield. How dare you?
I was close. Unbelievable as any character other than Spider-Man. Like, he had a fucking goatee and long hair, and then he spoke, and he was like, "Leisure, go to Japan." I was like, "Oh my god, no! You cannot play any character."
What do you mean? He was good in the Social Network as Eduardo.
Yeah, but that's because he could just be a nerdy kid with a high, squeaky voice. Like this, he's supposed to play like a Catholic priest. He can't do brooding either. He's horrible at brooding.
He's not getting all these roles with these good directors, though. I mean, he did Mel Gibson, now Martin Scorsese. Like, his agent's fucking amazing.
Yeah. I don't know. Not convincing at all. Not interested. Not unless there's another trailer where Liam Neeson is talking to the Japanese, like, you know, they're coming for you, and I've got special skills, and also I'm the gray guy from that movie We Beat Up the Wolves. That's my Liam Neeson.
Well, why would you cast so many action actors in a non-action movie?
Because action actors don't always want to just do action.
But that's what they're good at, Elliot.
They might be, but they want to branch out a bit.
And for those of us
that remember that Liam Neeson was an established actor before the Taken movies, are not too surprised by this, by the way.
You mean established in The Phantom Menace?
Before The Phantom Menace. Dude, the dude's been acting forever. No, I mean, I'd actually hug this.
As Ra's al Ghul?
Even before that, punk. Even before that.
Let's pull up his IMDb.
I would actually hug this because I'm actually really interested to see it. It looks to be a little bit more contemplative, a little more psychological. And even if the subject matter is not necessarily something I'd be interested in, I want to see more of these kinds of films in theaters. I just think we've become so inundated with schlock that in movies where you can just tell from the trailer that they're bad. There's no thought to them. They don't. There's no attempt even to reach deeper into anything that could be profound, that could actually move anyone. And I think a film like the trailer, at least from what I saw, I think that it will attempt to be a thinking person's film. And unfortunately, we just don't have a lot of those. So I would go see it because I think that I would hug it just because I want to see more of it. And more of these kind of contemplative films, you know, that are introspective, you know, that are not just spoon-feeding people what they've seen over and over and over again. So, I mean, in order for that to happen, we have to see these films, you know, at least see them once. And judge them appropriately, judge them properly, of course. But, you know, it all starts with, you know, people getting in the seats of the theater.
You're going to make me go see an Adam Driver, Andy Garcia movie.
Battleship, The A-Team, Clash of the Titans.
Battleship.
He's Aslan. He's a battleship. Fucking fighting lion.
Yeah.
Gangs anyway, in New York. When does he not fight? K-19, the Widowmaker?
I would see this if it was on Netflix. But I'm not going to the theaters to see this.
Or was it? He did play Schindler in Schindler's List. That's fair.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there you go.
But I mean, it did kill a lot of people, right? In Schindler's List?
No!
A lot of people did die. Yes, a lot of people did die. Not quite an action movie, but no, he saved a lot of people.
He saved people, he killed
Justin.
I haven't seen Schindler's List.
Oh my god. Have you not seen that movie?
Because I thought it was the list he was given by Hitler to kill people. I was like, I don't know. No!
The list is of the people he saved. Wow, and it's one of the greatest films ever made. I mean, you, Justin.
No one has ever gotten a movie more wrong than Justin did about Schindler's List.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. Good thing you didn't have to give a report on that in class.
Oh my god.
So then he got the list from Hitler and then he shot all these Jews in the head.
Well, Hitler found out he had a very specific set of skills.
Wow. All right, hashtag worst plot review ever.
Do we want to do the last trailer?
I guess.
So the last trailer is called The Comedian. It stars Robert De Niro and Judd Apatow's wife. And
feminists love when you do that.
I know. That's why I did it. She's actually very, very funny. Because women are funny and smart. Every time Amy Schumer talks about her vagina, I laugh.
Thank you, Cartman.
So the movie starts with Robert De Niro coming home. I can't remember the reason.
So you're still not going to say her name.
I was honestly, I can't remember. That's why I made that joke.
Leslie Mann.
Thank you. I was saying Amy Mann, but yes, Leslie Mann. And she's fucking funny in The 40-Year-Old Virgin when she throws up on Steve Carell.
Yeah.
Her character is great really in that scene. Movie. Yeah. She actually might be funnier than Judd Apatow. I think Judd Apatow married someone funnier than him. Certainly.
Pound for pound, she's funnier.
Well, that's because she weighs 10 pounds.
I know. That's what I'm saying. It's all concentrated.
So anyway, Robert De Niro plays like a gross-out, offensive New York Italian comedian who comes home and like everyone's mad at him. And then he meets Leslie Mann somehow and they start dating. And then, oh, I know what it is. I remember now because it's Danny DeVito. And the reason I remember this plot is you're going to find this hilarious. So he goes home to see his brother because his brother's daughter is getting married. And he brings Leslie Mann as his date to his brother's daughter's wedding, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I could gather is the plot of this movie.
He's a washed-up comedian who gets a second chance because of the internet.
Oh, okay.
You'd be horrible at writing DVD covers.
Well, yeah, shitty movies. You want to know why I remember the marriage thing?
Why?
Because that's actually Danny DeVito's daughter playing his daughter.
Oh, that's interesting.
The reason I know that is she was on that Tyler Labine show, Deadbeat, on the first season of that, and I go, she really looks like Danny DeVito. And then it turns out it was his daughter, and then he was on the second season of that show.
Hmm. All right, then. So, I think this looks funny.
Yeah.
Robert De Niro plays a good New York comedian, I think. I don't know about the plot. It looks like it's well written. Maybe a Netflix thing. Light hug. Maybe like pat on the back kind of thing.
Mm, that's how I feel. Light hug. Mm. Like one pat on the back and then, you know, just kind of backing away.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sold on this because I have to, like you with The Crown, I have to know what the theme is, and I have to know there is a theme, because this could very easily veer into naturalism, where it's just like, watch this guy get a second chance type deal. But it could also be as awesome as The Fighter, So it has to go either way, or it could go either way, and I have to read reviews before I see it and hear other people talk about it before I see it. Not that I'm relying on other people, but the value of a reviewer is they can say certain things that can key you into whether it would be worthwhile to you or not. And this is a movie that I need to see that first.
All right.
All right, so the last thing I want to talk about here in this segment is Disney's Moana. Now, none of us have seen it yet, but there was an interesting article on Variety where they're talking about Moana is just the latest feminist progressive Disney hit. And now we already talked about, I kind of went off on the word progressive on here. We always go off on the word feminist here, and we talk about the problems with feminism. Basically, what they're talking about in this article is they're saying, here's a quote. Mo Moana, oh, yeah, here's a. I'm going to read a couple sentences here. Moana takes it upon herself to. Well, I started scanning it and
Professional.
I was like, that's not the point I wanted. But this sentence is actually good too. Moana takes it. I could be saying this wrong too. So, any Pacific Islanders out there, sorry. Takes it upon herself to embark on a perilous oceanic voyage in order to lift her island home from a curse. It's the kind of adventuring that would have been left for the guys in Disney films of yore. In another feminist twist, Moana is one of the first animated films not to feature a love story. Her journey is about finding herself, not landing a husband. And they also draw parallels to Frozen, Zootopia, and Brave as other examples of progressive feminist animated movies. So, Daniel, I expect you would have a lot to say about this. My basic thing I'm wondering about is this actually signaling a shift in animated movies? Is this a good thing or a bad thing? Because I don't like the idea of writing for an agenda, but I do like the idea of having different types of stories. Like, one of the things I love about Aladdin is it inverts the typical Disney formula, where it's the guy who's down on his luck and has to convince the princess to love him, and he has to find his own self-worth as he does that. That's the inverse of the typical Disney formula, and I think it works. So I do like the idea of Disney switching up its formula, but to me, to this day, there are still homosexual undertones in Frozen, which of course became even more apparent when they translated that to a
Oh, come
Maleficent, which
on.
became lesbian Avatar.
Maybe Elliot will back me up on this, but what exactly is the Disney, what are we calling it? The Disney theme, the Disney,
Formula.
what was the phrase you used? Formula.
Yeah.
Because when I watch Disney movies, I mean, you can have a thing where it's like it's a princess and a prince, but the story is always radically different in each one. So I don't know what this formula is. That's my first sort of objection to how the article is written is, what the fuck is the formula? We never name it. We just take it for granted. But I actually want someone to name it. Tell me what the formula is.
The damsel in distress and the prince comes in and saves her. But it really, I mean, Disney, the
But
Disney
hold on,
princess
sorry,
is
Elliot.
what?
But that's not a Disney formula. That's a fucking storytelling
Story formula.
formula.
I
And like, if
know.
you just break it down, it's like, oh, it's man v nature again. Man v man. I can't take another one of these. Like, stop sort of micro breaking things down to that level. Look at the stories how they are. It might be a damsel in distress, but the way the story is told is unique in every single Disney movie.
Well, of
Esmeralda
course,
and the
like I would,
Hunchback, and I'm sorry, go now go
yes,
ahead, Elliot.
as I was saying, this is an attempt to try to put all of the princesses under an umbrella because you have people that they don't take the time to really know and learn about Disney's animated history, beyond the princesses, beyond the traditional Disney movies that we know and love. I mean, there's so many stories that Disney has told through their animation with a wide variety of characters. So for pieces like this to come out, oh, she's the Moana is the latest feminist progressive, character. No, she isn't. Disney has told some really incredible stories. Like Daniel said, Esmeralda with the Hunchback of Notre Dame. But there are a lot of stories that even predate that Disney has told that are in some cases, like in cases like the Black Cauldron, for example, that are darker, that deal with heavier themes. This is really just an attempt to kind of write off Disney animated films, as being, misogynistic fluff, you know, because they don't check the certain boxes that they want, that they want these films to check.
Well, right. So that's, I'm very the difference dubious between true feminism and the way feminism has been hijacked. I think you're on a good path here. You mentioned Esmeralda. Are there any other Disney princesses we can name that have rational, healthy feminist stories in them?
Well, I mean, you picked the one out to me that stands out.
Yeah, I didn't want to say it and seem like I was jacking off over Aladdin all the time. But
no, that was the one I was going to use. I mean, you are literally jacking off about Aladdin all the time. Yes.
Dude, that fucking red costume in Jasmine, on Jasmine, fuck.
Indeed, but Aladdin is one of them, certainly. But it's just,
yeah,
it's
I'm not
even
surprised
so much that
to be won, right?
Right, exactly. But it's not even, again, it's not even just the, it has to invert some story or it has to do this. It's just that every single story that Disney tells is told in a unique, interesting way. There is not a formula. It is basically a story that is crafted specifically for the set of characters they have and the circumstance they want to bring out.
It's because of the happy endings is what people are complaining about, that people find true love at the end. I mean, this is the same thing, right? When Lost first came out, I remember people were complaining that Lost was misogynistic because all of the women on the show had traditional female roles. Like, one of them was pregnant. Why does there always have to be a pregnant woman? Because women get pregnant.
Because women get pregnant.
Right. Sorry. It's the same thing. Why are there always romances in stories? Because that's a major driving force in human life, is falling in love.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, men and women still do fall in love and make babies. Like, it happens.
Right, and that's why there are a lot of stories about that. And that's why when you have stories about such as Aladdin, I'm going to just hit that because that's what I know the best. That's why it's a major element. You could just make a story about him achieving his self-esteem, but there it's a grand story. It's very romanticized. So at the end, when he conquers, he's not just becoming beloved by the kingdom, he's finding the woman who loves him too, especially because he has mother issues. So there's a lot going on there. It's not just a simple like, oh, well, he has to fall in love.
Well, the Lion King. You know, even though, I mean, we're not dealing with human beings there, but you have a character, the protagonist, Simba, a male, stepping into his role as king, wresting it back from his wicked uncle that has destroyed the kingdom because he's mismanaged it. You know, and there's a lot to be that's been written about the Lion King. There are so many collegiate, you know, theses that have been written about the film, with its odes to the Bible, to Shakespeare, to all sorts of different motifs that people have read and studied. But that's another film that, you know, the protagonist is a male. He's the one that has to achieve his goal. He's the one that has to move forward. He has to choose to step out of this kind of naive adolescence, this perpetual adolescence, and step into the role of the adult and of the leader that he was meant for.
But even when you're talking about women, look at Nala in that movie. The romance isn't forefronted, but Pinja.
But it's there, yeah.
Pinja again. I mean, I would argue it's very Snyder-esque the way her relationship is to Simba. She's almost like Lois or Martha is to Clark Kent in Batman versus Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was going to say, take a Disney classic like Sleeping Beauty, where it is a damsel in distress kind of story. But in that picture, you have the full gamut of female characters, from the damsel in distress to the evil witch, to the queen, to the three fairies, the starry fairy step parents, or whatever they are, who all have different personalities and take turns raising her and have different ways of viewing the world. It's an incredibly complex portrayal of women. Much so more than it is a complex portrayal of men, by the way. The men are the ones who get painted with this blanket brush of and handsomeness or whatever it is.
Right. I mean, if you really want to go into it, this is where the MRA people step in and talk about male disposability and what you just said. Aren't the men the one who fucking get shit on, where they're the ones who come in and they're the prizes to be won for these women and they don't have complexity. I mean, what about the Beast? He has to change everything about himself for a woman to love him.
That's right.
That's what makes
including
him such a great
dashing character. Good looks.
But that's what makes this such a good story for the Beast, though. Because it's even though he was pretty in the beginning, he was a horrible person. And it was about him, you know, learning to be a better person.
The Little Mermaid is a story about a woman who thinks she has to give something up in order to get a man and a real life, but to learn she doesn't. She can be herself. She can be her her grandness.
And talk about not having a character. Name one personality trait for Prince Eric.
He's a prince. Gay?
Adventurer. He's the adventurer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Don't play Disney with me. Disney.
I mostly remember him as being the ambiguously gay prince.
Yeah,
but
he drove a ship.
That's in the parks. That's in the parks. That's not in the film.
And then even again, going back to what was I thinking of Robin Hood? Like Maid Marian's an incredibly strong female character in that movie. Mm-hmm. And then you have other strong female characters who take it upon themselves, like the rabbit mom and the little rabbit girl and. Anyway, like I said, there is no Disney formula. That's a made-up thing that feminists and liberal progressive nonsense people use to bash on culture and bash on normalizing.
Disney.
And on Disney specifically, but yeah.
Yeah.
So fuck you.
And when we're talking
the premise of the question.
Yeah.
Those people belong on Reddit.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say when we're talking about liberals making up stuff. The perfect place to go to that is Reddit on Reddit.
These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it.
The first Reddit we have here is not actually a Reddit. It's a story about Reddit. And I'm going to need you guys to give me some more information here, because I have a question for you. This article is in the Washington Post. It's called Reddit CEO Regrets Trolling Trump Supporters by Secretly Editing Their Post. And apparently what he did is, whenever there were posts in r/Donald that were critical of him, he edited those posts using his powers as the head of Reddit to make them references to high-powered Donald Trump supporters, which would make them infight. This is, of course, also after they changed the algorithms of their site, because the people in r/Donald were able to get a lot of pro-Trump stuff onto the front page, and they didn't want that on Reddit, so they changed the rules of the game so they couldn't win it anymore. And they also shut down a subreddit called Pizzagate, the claim that there was a secret child sex trafficking ring run by the Democrats, which supposedly has been debunked by the New York Times and others. Therefore, they got rid of it, because so much for free speech if the New York Times says it isn't true.
We reported it in the 1930s that there was no starvation or bread lines in Soviet Russia and that everyone was being very well fed.
Yeah, and you can get rid of the subreddit bread lines in Soviet Russia because it's not true. This reminds me of, apparently, the Jack Dorsey of Twitter got himself banned from Twitter for a little bit, which I thought was hilarious, because it doesn't surprise me this Reddit guy did this. Because if I asked, how do you get yourself banned from Twitter if you're the guy who founded Twitter? Like, can't you write in an exception to the code that you don't get banned no matter what? My question about Reddit is, didn't they have a problem with their previous CEO too? That woman who was like super corrupt.
Yeah. Ellen Powell. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know much about that story. Elliot, do you have any background on that?
Not about Ellen Powell. That was all part of, there was a bit of a conclusion to the Gamergate stuff that we discussed before.
Yeah. She was involved on pro gamer or like anti, whatever. She hated the, she was on the bad side of Gamergate.
Right. The only thing I'm going to say about this is that if Twitter is any indication, a lot of these Trump people who post on Reddit probably needed to have their posts edited, you know, like proofread, maybe take down some of the superfluous exclamation points. But I mean, the idea that he would actually go in and swap Donald, you know, the name, his own name for somebody else's name in these tweets, I mean, this Reddit post, I don't know, that's...
I can understand why they would be a little bit upset, why they would be upset about that. But yeah, honestly, though, some of you need to be proofread. Some Trump supporters need to be proofread.
Well, if he had gone through and put in proper punctuation, no one would be angry about this. But the point is that why are you alienating the group that's crying that they're the ones being alienated? You're just proving them right.
Mm-hmm.
You're just giving them ammunition. It's insane to think that this did anything except rile up Trump supporters and make them even more likely to vote for Donald Trump, to actually get out there and pull that lever. Additionally, the left's got to be really careful. We're in a precarious moment. I mean, the technological left, like Twitter and Reddit. We're in a precarious moment where one major thing happens and your entire platform is going to collapse. I mean, Twitter already doesn't make any money. And if they're going to start banning alt-right folks left and right, you ban the wrong person one time and it goes viral, Twitter's going to be effed in the A. And they're not going to have any users left, or they're going to have a small user base who are liberal elite sort of echo chamber people. And it's just going to fail miserably. And Reddit's got to be careful. They've built up this community based on free speech. And yes, it is a bit left, but they built up the idea that you can have this community where you can say anything. It's Reddit, anything goes, etc. But no, apparently not. And if they lose that one part of their brand, how are they any different from any other messaging board?
Well, that's what I was going to ask you about message boards in general, because you do see this on Reddit a lot where people censor you. I mean, I tried to post in DC Cinematic my post that ended with "fuck you, Devin Faraci, you're a huge asshole." When he obviously had the agenda against Snyder, if you remember, and they told me I couldn't post that because it was trolling and it was a personal attack. But as we've since seen, that was a good thing to try and expose him like that, because he has an agenda against Snyder and that needs to be said. But they're claiming free speech on these boards and they don't have them. They never had free speech. I've never been on a message board that had free speech. So why do we have the pretense? Should we just get rid of the
pretense?
The
point is that if you had a board, like if you were running a board, you would have free speech. Because anyone can start a board, I'm pretty sure. And if you start one and you can have whatever rules you want on it, it's sort of like your own little domain, you can have free speech. But now we know that's not even true, because literally the president of the company is in there editing comments, which is crazy.
Well, and that also proves the company doesn't really do anything, that he has that much fucking free time that he can go in there.
That's true. It's one of those things. It's like, don't you have a day job?
All right. Next Reddit. What is the worst TV show that became ridiculously popular? And I'm just going to put one caveat on this. Let's not name reality shows. So let's talk about
that's not fair.
Narrative shows. Because if you go in the Reddit, they're all listing things like Here Comes Honey Boo Boo, Keeping Up with the Kardashians. No, let's talk about like scripted or non-scripted narrative shows.
Okay, so controversial opinion of the night. Here we go. Game of Thrones. I have tried watching that now for the third time. It is shitty. It may have good production value, but you can put good production value on a turd and it's still a turd. It is a terrible show about fucking nothing. And all it is an excuse to watch people get raped and murdered. There we go.
Now, when you say about nothing, do you mean thematically?
Nothing. Things happen, but the show has no themes. Or if they do, they're terrible themes, or it's just about nothing. The show is about nothing.
Yeah, it teeters on that same line of The Walking Dead where the theme seems to be the Hobbesian war of every man against every man. So you're just watching people get killed.
Yeah.
My thing with Game of Thrones is when they finally put Tyrion and Daenerys together in scenes, I was like, oh, good. I don't have to watch 90% of the show now. I'm only watching for those two characters anyway.
And it's just shitty writing to have that many characters so that you don't have to spend time developing any of them. That's just a writing cop-out.
Good, I don't have to watch it then.
You don't. It's fucking disgusting shit. So, that's my controversial opinion of the day. And then you have other sort of things like Orange is the New Black. I think it's pretty terrible, but I suspect there's some value to it.
Well, I don't think Orange is the New Black is as popular as people make it out to be either. I think there's a little bit of internet hype in the same way with Hillary there was internet hype in regards to Netflix shows.
Yeah.
I mean, now they have that Stranger Things commercial. Have you seen the commercial where going to grandma's house is a technological hole going there for the holidays? And then grandma upgrades everything and they're watching an old movie with the family and grandma's like, we used to watch this all the time. And then the grandfather goes, watch Stranger Things. Now we watch Stranger Things all the time. And now, like, the hype for Stranger Things has gotten to that level. And it was that way for the Daredevil, too, to the point that the Marvel shows got that hype. I mean, if you're going to throw Orange is the New Black in there, don't you have to say the same thing with Jessica Jones?
Oh, sure, certainly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For me, the answer I was going to give is Glee.
Ooh.
Fucking such a really, really bad show. It's just music videos, basically.
Yeah.
It started out with such promise, too.
Yeah, but Ryan Murphy is very good with premise writing. Like, and then he'll do, like, when he made Sue Principal for, like, two episodes. No, that's a season-long arc, if you're going to do that properly. So he generates good ideas, but he does not execute them well at all.
Yeah, that's true.
My pick is a terrible, terrible, terrible show. And when the character has my name, Elliot, Mr. Robot. I don't understand how it's going into its third season already. I don't understand because it's just terrible. It's self-indulgent. It's lazy. It's intellectually dishonest. Why in the world does it have a fan base? And why would it have done better than some other shows that never made it out of their first season that debuted around the same time? I just don't understand it at all. I don't understand the appeal of Mr. Robot.
Again, I think there's a lot of echo chamber hype on this one. I think it's a fantasy of the left, so they hype it up. I mean, ironically, we're in Reddit right now. I think this is something Redditors would love. Oh, look at this hacker who's going to restore social justice to the world. So even if it's not as successful ratings-wise, it'll go because it'll give these people more cred within the industry. And that makes them feel good, so they continue to make it.
Yeah. Indeed. Indeed.
All right. Yeah. Well, hopefully we can undepress you with the last Reddit. And this Reddit is not... I'm not accepting the premise of this Reddit. My question actually is this a good thing to do or not? So this Reddit is asking, what's your favorite way to mess with strangers? Now, here's the interesting thing. If you read the Reddit, the first one, that the highest one, the one that's been upvoted the most, actually isn't even messing with strangers. So he says he's out with his wife a lot and they're both gingers. So people will ask them, are you married or are you brother and sister? And the guy started replying, both. To me, that's not messing with strangers. That's just a funny response to people being stupid.
Yeah.
So my question is, do you guys mess with strangers? And if so, how do you be okay with that and not say it's interpersonal hostility?
My mother taught me never to talk to strangers. So, I mean, can messing with them be like, I will have my earbuds in and... you know, even when I'm not listening to music so that fewer people will talk to me? Does that count as messing with strangers?
I don't think that's not how I interpret the word messing.
Yeah, I don't. I think it's a bad idea, typically. I mean, I'm not against the one-off prank, things like that, but why you gotta mess with people?
But one-off fucking pranks be benevolent, move on. People.
That's how I feel.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it can be funny as long as it's not harmful to them, like you're not hurting them in some way, but like pranks can be funny. Yeah.
I don't mess with strangers. I see these prank videos on Facebook and on Twitter and Instagram, and I'm just like, who has the time? I don't have time for this. I got my own stuff to do. I don't need to mess with anybody.
What do you think it says about people who mess with strangers then? Is there a sort of... Because for me, it seems like it's a need to feel superior. Oh, look at this person who I don't know, who I can get away with doing these things because I'm so much smarter than them. When in reality, what they're doing is they're basically sandbagging. They're setting it up in their favor where this is a person without any context and completely unaware and unexpecting that they do something to, but they still feel good because they got one over on them.
I think that might be some of it. I think you're shock and awe psychologizing for the most part.
Look, I am.
Some of it is just funny. Like, as long as it's harmless prank stuff, I wouldn't even mind being, like, it wouldn't bother me if I was the subject of a prank, as long as it was a harmless thing. Like, my one of the ones that I find amusing are, like, a guy goes into a porta potty, comes up and puts a fake boardroom around the porta potty. So when he opens it up, it's like he's going into a board meeting suddenly. And he, like, has a little jump and he's like, ah, and he closed the door. Like, ah, that's funny. No one was harmed. Like, his day wasn't ruined. He didn't lose any money or time or effort. Like, but it was funny. We all get a laugh out of it. Ha 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 ha. Moving on. So sometimes it's just, it's not a psychology thing. It's just a, this is amusing.
See, we're going to get into a debate about the word mess with here. Because to me, what you said is not messing with strangers.
It is. I mean, they don't know this guy. It's a random guy who went into a porta potty. So.
But are you talking about, like, if somebody asks you for directions and you deliberately give them the wrong direction?
That's how I interpret messing with someone.
Is that what you mean? Okay.
Well, that's a different kind of messing with, but I think it's all in the messing with category. I think people who do that are dicks and need to be flogged. Not literally flogged, but, like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Socially flogged. But I don't know.
I don't have the time. I don't know why. Who would you mess with? Like, nobody. I don't mess with anybody.
All right, let's save time then.
I work and come home.
Save your time and end this thing. What did we learn this week, this trip, this whatever metaphor we're going to use? Daniel?
God. I mean, I guess I learned that, how do I phrase it? The left. Are you okay there, Elliot? It's not like you're.
I'm okay.
Is it like you were licking the microphone? Or...
Yeah.
I don't know.
Believe me.
Is that your cat just...
It's not my cat at all. Like, somebody is doing... We'll talk about it after the show.
I don't know. I guess I just learned... I didn't learn this, but it sort of solidified in me that the left really just, like, salivates... Not even would be okay with, but actively salivates and wants dictatorship.
Yep.
Just... They want the right form of it. And, like, the whole ridiculousness over Castro's death is just really opened my eyes. Like, I sort of knew that, but I didn't know that they want it.
They want the D.
They...
Would have been the funniest thing you've ever said, Elliot.
Elliot, what'd you learn?
I learned that Justin has not seen Schindler's List. God, just hang up the microphone. You're fired. You're fired.
You do gotta watch it, but it's like, you know, it's not on the same level as your incompetence, Justin. But, like, I've never gone to the Holocaust Museum, and I live in D.C. But it's the same thing where it's like you gotta be in a mood because you know it's gonna be really fucking depressing, and so you don't really drink, so it's hard to get you in that mood.
And to be fair to my misinterpretation, in Schindler's Fist, he has a list of people that he's fisting.
Okay. All right.
I made that up. I have no idea if that actually exists or not.
Okay.
That was a cheap joke.
Rule 34. I'm sure rule 34.
Justin, what did you learn this week?
Other
than the plot to Schindler's List.
I learned that there's actually a very good use for what I've been doing in the beginning of these episodes, and that's going to continue because I thought the opening to this episode was stellar and it gave me a lot of good fodder. So,
Learning to be humble. Yes, indeed. So if you learned something this week, you can go ahead and tweet at the Midside. You can go send us a Facebook message at the Midside. God, I think we're on every social media platform now, right? We're on the Snapchat and Instagram and midside.com/podcast. God, we're everywhere. You can't stumble over a web page without tripping over, you know, Justin's big fat head.
There's some new social media platform that the Clay Enos, Zack Snyder's set photographer is trying to push, and we're not on that because I don't know what it
Why
is.
Why not? No.
We're on Gab as well, which is supposed to be like the right wing Twitter.
We're on Gab?
Yeah, but I signed up for it. And every once in a while, someone follows me. I'm like, wow, I have a better follow rate on Gab than I do on Twitter.
Are we on Elo, which was supposed to be the Facebook competitor?
I don't know what Elo is.
Fucking failed. It was miserable.
Elo took two lyrics of an
ad. I was a beta tester. I was a beta tester for Elo, by the way.
Oh, wow.
It
didn't go.
And I used it once, and it was just like, whatever.
Yeah. Eventually we'll be on LinkedIn because we're going to be professionals. We're on iTunes. We're on Google Play. You can download the episodes, subscribe. And if you're on iTunes, why don't you just go ahead and type in Midside, the little search bar, find the podcast, and leave us a 5-star review. It's Christmas time. We need your stars. We live for the stars. Even if you hate the show, and if you tune in this episode and you're like, Jesus, this is fucking terrible, write that in a comment, click 5 stars, and click submit. That's our thing. We like the 5 stars. So far, we have a perfect rating. Let's keep it that way. But really, we say this every week, but we kind of mean it this week. Maybe some weeks we haven't meant it. Tell a friend. Seriously, tell a friend. Friendship is a good thing. And if you want to continue having friends, you should give them this show. It's really the show that bonds people. It's like Gorilla Glue. It's like an adhesive that sticks to anything. And it just brings you together. You can put it, you know, whatever you want to be bonded with our hands or genitalia, whatever you want to do with your friends, bring us in. Put us right in the middle. Brings people together. Yeah, I'm a little drunk. I'm just kidding. What else do we have? Patreon. Patreon's the one I want to remind people of. Patreon.com/TheMidSide. If you're unfamiliar with Patreon, it's fantastic. It's a way for us to make a little bit of money back on this show, pay for hosting, you know, website stuff, maintenance, Justin's cocaine habit. And basically what we do is every time we put out an episode, you can choose to give us money when we do that. So you can't be like, yeah, I'm gonna give these fuckers $10 a month no matter what. No. We don't want your blood money. What we want is money for content that we produce. So you can say like, yeah, $2 an episode, buck an episode, $25 an episode, whatever it is. And then that's how that happens. Our Patreon subscribers are awesome. Thank you so much for helping make this show a possible. Helps us keep the lights on. Big fan of lights, especially here during the holidays. I'm sitting across from our Christmas tree, which has approximately 600,000 ornaments on it. It is about to fall over at any given second. And I need money to keep that shit on. Christmas lights are expensive.
Yeah. Somebody support donating. By buying a Wonder Woman ornament and putting it on the tree.
That's right. And not the naked.
And ornament. By tree, he means his. No, I'm not going to go there.
No, I literally bought the Wonder Woman ornament. Not with Patreon money, just to be clear.
I was going to say, wait a minute. So, yeah, tell a friend, 5 stars on iTunes, Patreon, and then thanks to Liberty.me folks. We're syndicated through them. We love our libertarians. Aren't you people wonderful? Yes. So, yeah, go John Allison. Hope he's the Treasury Secretary.
Woo!
This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin M. Lesneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day. There's our after show clip right there.
We weren't recording yet.
Ah, boo.
All right, we're now recording.
Okay. And I'm gonna do. Feel free to be funny during the monologue. Oh, wait.
Fucking damn it, you already did that, and my reaction's not gonna be as natural. Come on.